Thursday, June 1st on the Ira Kaufman Podcast. June 1st, Ira. How about that, Ira? You know what? This is the 11th month of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. What do you think about that? We're in our 11th month of broadcasting this thing.
I'm amazed that we can come up with 90 minutes or 2 hours worth of buck discussion in season, Lee, off season. Now, of course, in the words of Isbitz, there is no buck off season. That's a classic line of his. But here we are. The calendar flips to June. What does that mean? We're one step closer to training camp. We're 2 weeks away from the Bucks actually breaking away for about 6 weeks, Lee. That means that nothing's going on at one Buck place. And it also means we will continue our podcast and our columns, Steve, because as you said, there's no break here at Joe Buck's.
Lee, before you jump in here, anybody who wants to rewind the podcast now will hear that after I asked you this question about the 11th month of the podcast, you started by saying, I'm amazing. And then you corrected yourself.
I said, I'm amazed. He's picking on me already.
Well, it was a Freudian slip that you just happened to say, I'm amazing.
I was listening to Jameis too much.
You mean like Justin and Jason, the Freudian slip.
Too much Jameis, like Lee said. But yeah, 11 months, unbelievable that we're entering this. And you know what? You've been working like a dog, Ira. And I'll have to say, some people told me before you came on board, Ira, you can't get him to work hard, whatever. The guy's filing his Memorial Day column to me at 8 a.m.
That's right.
He's banging away. He's produced tons of stuff.
Doing podcast days in advance. Hey, Steve, I've got a question for you. Now, I thought I read the column over yesterday once it was posted. Did you take out a little reference I had to the real commish or something? And then I said, sorry, Justin. Did you leave that in or did you
That's
take that out? Didn't I put a little reference?
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I remember
you left it in there. Okay.
Matter of fact, Steve linked to Justin's podcast with that reference.
Yeah, I actually inserted a link to Justin's podcast so people would know who it was. So yes, Ira. What are you insinuating?
I'm just wondering if you were editing me with a heavy brush over there, Isbitz. you never know.
Why would I take that out?
He's getting to be Mike Garbett over here. Huh?
You know, over the years, and I gotta say, you know, with all fairness, and you guys notice, the newspaper desk catches a lot more mistakes, Lee, than they make.
Oh yeah.
But the worst thing in the world is somebody inserting a mistake and your name's on the byline.
Mm-hmm.
It happened very rarely, but it happened a couple of times. And, boy, I gave them hell. I gave them hell, Lee. You know, they put something in off the top of their head without checking it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a fact, and the fact's wrong. My name's on that.
Yeah.
I can't deal with that.
I always got along with the copy desk really well, maybe because I always had the mentality, and you sort of touched upon it, they made me look good.
Yes.
They made me look good. They would find mistakes or they'd have questions. They made me look good. So as you stated, for every time they made you look bad, they made you look good a lot more.
I think our listeners need to know, Steve, that my columns don't go up as is. It does go through the Isbitz filter. It is it is an excruciating cauldron.
Cauldron.
And, you know, you're looking for fact errors, any references to Justin Pawlowski? You know, so far I got no complaints, Steve.
All right, Ira. Enough. All right, look, I'm Steve Isbitz, JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper's with us, JoeBucksFan.com. Ira's voice is unmistakable, breaking windows across the Tampa Bay
area. Do we have a sponsor for this podcast, Mr.
And of
Isbitz?
Of course, the podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. More than 70-plus years of Ed Morse. What a wonderful family of dealerships. And, of course, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They present all of your work, Ira, your Monday, Wednesday, and Friday columns, your Tuesday and Thursday podcasts, your...
Your shirts, your hats,
your 10 takeaways from each game, occasional other things that you do, whatever they are. They present everything that you do. And June means the new June offers at Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. They'll be firing up in a matter of hours. You want to get to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. You've already got great offers there right now. I bought 3 pre-owned vehicles there between myself and my daughter over the handful of years. Fantastic place to go. And
so even though the Memorial Day holiday is over, the great deals continue, Steve?
The Memorial Day sales event is done. I mean, when the offers are over, they're over. There's no, Ira told me last week. It doesn't work that way. But... definitely want to get to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Next podcast, we'll have all the offers, June offers to talk about.
Mention and Joe Bucks fan, you know, Steve. You never know how much weight that's going to carry at the dealership.
At Brandon, you can go to General Manager Mark Wamsley, telling you heard about Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon on the Ira Kaufman podcast, Brian Danahy, same thing. Great general manager over at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, and we're excited. We love him, and we never forget him. Ira has even has his Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa Brandon pillow, which one of these days we'll get a picture of that and stick it up on Twitter. All right, Kaufman. We actually had a preliminary meeting here before this podcast, a very rare event.
Where while I was having lunch.
While you were stuffing your grill, one of your pastimes. And we've got a few things to talk about. So we got some stuff to get to. First, I want to go here, Ira. This tweet that upset Dirk Cutter. The guy marches up to a news conference, doesn't happen very often, marches up to his news conference and says, darn it, you know, that's not the way this organization is going to be. And this tweet, which was a response to the Falcons, the Bucs sent back a mocking tweet with a picture of Vernon Hargraves, number 28, next to Jameis Winston, number 3. And, of course, the Falcons choked away a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. Cutter walks up and apologizes for that and basically says, we have no business mocking a Super Bowl team that got to the Super Bowl. This is BS, and enough of that. We haven't done crap yet. Well, I wrote about that a couple days later saying the team hasn't even taken down the tweet, and that stuff circulates and circulates and circulates, especially since many stories were written. What a slap in the face to Coach Cutter. I want your take on the whole broad situation, why he cared so much, in your opinion, and what it means that they didn't take this thing down.
I think in his own way, Lee, he kind of drew attention to something that was going to be passing through tonight, and nobody was even talking about it until Cutter, you know, before a gaggle full of reporters, there's your word over there, Lee, all of a sudden, you know, prefaced all his remarks by saying something that was really on his mind. May I, gentlemen, that the impetus for this could have come from ownership? You know, the Glazers are pretty close to Arthur Blank, you know, see him all the time. The meetings were going on out there. So, yeah, Irv, you know, is that something that maybe got handed down from up above? Or, did it offend Dirk Honor's sense of morality? Lee, I'm going to say I just think he drew attention to something unnecessarily that would not have been a big story until Cutter decided to make it a story.
If there's anything I've learned in the Dirk Cutter regime, which is a little over a year, I'm convinced he does nothing that's not calculated. To your point about Glazer, if the Glazers intervene, why is that Twitter still up there? You're right. You're absolutely right in that it would have passed through the night. I'm on Twitter like a maniac. I'm on Twitter at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm on Twitter at 7 o'clock in the morning. I didn't even know about it until Cutter referenced
I'm not sure Cutter would have been asked about it, Steve, that day. Maybe, maybe not.
No.
Nobody was buzzing about
here's
that.
I want your input on this, Irv. Almost called you Irv.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, thanks to this bit there, Mr. Kaufman. Cutter, we do know, is a consumer of both local and national media when it comes to the Bucks. Matter of fact, he gets a portfolio every day. What's said, what's not said about the Bucks? He laid on his desk. I think he has completely gone bananas with some degree of credibility. He's going bananas because all he hears about is playoff talk, whether it's national, NFL.com, NFL networks talk about the Bucks should be in the playoffs. Locally, you know, it's fantastic. Fans are excited, and Cutter's all for getting fans excited. But he's like, whoa, 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 I got a young team here. I can't hear these guys, you know, all this playoff chatter. These guys, it's way over the top. It's out of hand. I'm going to try to put the kibosh on
it. I think that part of this story, Lee, if it's part of the diatribe against putting up that 28-3, that part is legitimate because I think it is legitimately on Cutter's mind because when he sits, you know, behind closed doors, you know, with Jason Light, a couple of the other people at the Brain Trust, maybe a Brian Glazer, what do they worry about? They're not so worried about this roster because they filled a lot of holes on this roster. Not that they're the New England Patriots, but, you know, they're a pretty darn good team right now. What he worries about the mindset. That's what he worries about. Young team, you're right, coming off 9-7 season. He knows what the fan expectations are. I don't think he minds a little confidence, but who can argue with Cutter's main point? They haven't done diddly yet. They haven't won a playoff game since 2007, Lee. So Cutter doesn't want to get ahead of himself. And in that regard, strictly on that regard, I like what he's doing, trying to keep their minds straight on that.
Now, also, doesn't Cutter have some history of being concerned about this. What I mean by this, wasn't it last year after they beat Atlanta in Atlanta? Wasn't there some chatter in a locker room where they thought, hey, we could just show up to Arizona and we can get the job done? They got clobbered. And Cutter's like, uh-oh, we have a lot of guys coming back from last year. It's already happened once.
On top of that, check me if I'm wrong, but didn't a player or maybe more than one player kind of acknowledge
Dodson,
that,
right?
that the Atlanta win got to their heads? One win, Steve. One freaking win.
Was it Dodson?
Yeah, it might have been Dodson.
Yeah, it was Dodson who told me that it was something we were able to break last year in Arizona. And then I was like, holy crap, did he just say that? And then I walked, this is to me and myself, and said that. And then I walked over to Joe Hawley and said, hey, DeMar just said this. What do you think of that? And Hawley was all in and agreed and expounded. So
that shows an immaturity, Steve, right there.
Absolutely. But that's in the NFL world, at least with this team. It should be a long time ago. You know, week two of last season, they should have matured. But I've been taking notes while you guys were talking. I have three points of contention, Ira.
Not 3 points. 3 points of contention, Lee.
It's 2 points and one clarification. First, you like to give, as listeners know, you like to give a word of the day. And you sort of just implied the word of the day was gaggle. And I just want to let you know, Lee's written that many times in relation to cheerleaders. A gaggle of cheerleaders or a gaggle of scantily clad babes, so that you're not teaching us anything there. I know you tried.
Well, mine was to a reference of reporters, and anybody knows that the Tampa Bay media, there's not a lot of prime cuts in there, so to speak, Lee. All right, continue, my friend.
Although I'm hearing rumors about Dan Lucas's intern.
We'll see.
She hasn't made an appearance
yet. Reports are very promising, Steve.
Now, you seem to speculate, Ira, that Team Glazer fueled this apology by Cutter because they didn't like it and they're close to Arthur Blank. The only reason I mentioned Irv, which I said I wasn't going to mention anymore, is because you brought up Arthur Blank, who began the legend of Irv by calling you that
for
12 years and will continue to do so. But that doesn't, the Glazer fueled thing is a little bit weird because wouldn't they have taken down the tweet?
Yeah.
If it was fueled by the Glazers, and you know what? The Glazers are pretty, I'm not going to say they're regular guys, but as billionaires go, they're pretty regular guys. Arthur Blank's got a good sense of humor. I personally think the Glazers and Arthur Blank, they love this stuff. They love the, let's build a rivalry, the back and forth, the, hey, Joel, you butthead, you couldn't get in the Super Bowl. They love that kind of locker room banter. That's just my opinion.
And you're saying Dirk Cutter obviously does not. Steve.
Yes, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
I think the teams love that stuff. They eat it up. Remember,
these teams don't like each other. They don't need. I don't think they need a lot of extra motivation. The Bucks are trying to unseat them as division champs.
I know 5-7 years ago, for example, when Raheem was around, there was some bitterness between those teams. Is that still there?
I don't know. I still remember when the Bucks' heyday with Sapp and Simeon, and I remember the Panthers. I remember going to Spartanburg, mm-hmm. During the summer when the Trib had money to spend, Lee, and they would send me there, and I would go to Flowery Branch, and I'd go to Spartanburg.
You'd have sit-downs with Mike Smith John Fox.
And that's how I got to know John Fox, and, you get him on a conference call. Ira.
Yep.
And Isbitz is rolling his eyes. Well, what's going on? But I would go there, and, they had some big yakkers. Chris Jenkins, he was a big-time talker. Uh-huh. And they had, Brenson Buckner and guys like that, and Julius Peppers.
Yeah, Peppers.
And I remember, they were starting a little war going on. We got the better front four than the Bucks, and I remember I called Catherine Smith, and hey, Catherine, this is what Jenkins said. She's back at one Buck place. She runs out and flags Sapp down and tells him what Peppers is saying, and then Sapp says something. So, look, Steve, there's nothing wrong with having a rivalry with the teams in your division, and the Bucks have been doormats till last year for so long that I don't mind them getting a little kick-ass, badass, mm-hmm. In the words of Cutter, attitude. Again, Cutter hasn't made a lot of mistakes since he got here, Lee, but I think he unnecessarily brought attention to
so
that.
So you think it was
tweet.
Overboard?
I think it was overboard, and as Steve said, well, why isn't the tweet taken down? What's going on?
So you don't think it was a calculated, I hate to use the word stunt, but a calculated public slap down to get his team, because he knows his team's going to hear it.
Well,
oh, it was calculated. I mean, he walked off the practice field, marched over reporters, and started with that.
Immediately,
I mean, the guy's just thinking about X's and O's and player evaluation, and that's what he is on the tip of his mind. He thought about that for a long time. I think the nuance, maybe, Lee, what you're saying is that maybe it wasn't very well thought through as far as being calculated in a sense of, I don't know.
I thought he was doing it specifically. Wasn't so much, maybe this is just me. Maybe I'm reading way too much into it. His purpose, he didn't give a damn about social media. His purpose was his players.
Yeah.
That's what I talk about. What I mean by calculated. It was all, the whole thing was about his players.
Keep him on the straight and narrow, Steve. Yeah.
You know what? Maybe he does care about social media. Maybe we just don't realize it. I don't know. Maybe this was a little window into that because he is clearly very sensitive to what's going on in the media. He looks at all kinds of stuff all over the place. Not everybody is he reading, but he's reading a lot. And you know, Ira, Lee, I wish one day we could talk about this, but one of the untold stories of last season happened about a last preseason. Cutter went off in a direction that was not reported behind the scenes. And, you know, he's a hot-headed kind of guy with a little bit of an axe for the media when he feels like it. And
I've heard stories about him at Arizona State. This goes back a ways.
Yeah,
really?
Steve. Yeah, he had problems with some of the beat writers that were covering the teams. Thought they were too negative, unfair. This goes back a ways, Steve.
Yeah, it really does. And that's not imagined. Actually, the last time I was in Arizona, not for the owner's meetings, but for that Bucks game, yeah, I was listening to sports, local sports radio. Good golly, they hate Dirk Cutter. I'm not exaggerating. They do not like Dirk Cutter. And on the flip side, they love Jason Light. He used to do a regular interview on sports radio there, and the guys have him on usually once a year. And he's like a beloved figure as a number two to the GM, because usually nobody knows who that number two is. But Light does interviews once a year or so in Arizona. Yet Cutter, gosh, they couldn't stand that guy. So
wow.
Interesting stuff.
And he did a decent job as a coach there.
I got a quick story about Cutter.
Please.
Kent Summers is a long-time writer, very solid with the Cardinals. He's a Hall of Fame voter, very solid citizen journalist. And
citizen journalist.
Does he have a library card?
When I was out in Phoenix with Izbits, you know, and I finally recovered from being in the passenger seat with Izbits driving down the streets of Arizona.
He still got you worked up about that.
I still never forget it. The cringe.
Well,
the cringe factor
The
cringe factor was substantial.
You're from Brooklyn.
I understand that.
And you're worried about aggressive driving
but
with
Izbits. But this is McDowell Avenue. They don't know from these things, you know. So anyway, I was talking to Summers about Cutter. And Summers said, you know, last night they had the pool party and over there. And I found myself face to face with Cutter. And Cutter looked at me and he goes, hey, Summers, you were the only guy in the local Arizona media that I liked, that I got along with. And Summers, I said, what'd you say to Cutter? He goes, I looked at him. I go, Dirk, that's because I didn't cover you.
Oh.
He was covering something else. So, you know, he wasn't part of that gaggle. There it is again. But, you know, Steve, to your point, he was not well-liked by the local media in Arizona. I think Cutter's got a good reputation here in Tampa, and certainly 9-7 did nothing to tarnish that. But we'll see how it goes on. All I'm saying is I didn't think that was a hot-button issue at the time for him to come off the field and bring it up.
It's
right
interesting.
Away.
That's why I think he did that specifically for his players. Yeah. Now, I got a Kent Summers Buccaneers story for you.
All right.
Since you brought Kent Summers, I think Bucs fans like this. Before the draft, obviously, you know, right now Jameis is just about beloved in this area. Yeah, there's still some people that have issue with what happened before, or, you know, he's never going to change their minds. But before the draft, at best, it was 50-50, Jameis or Mariota. Jameis was anything but a beloved figure around here. Outside of maybe some Florida State fans, people didn't care for Jameis. And people wouldn't have cried if they didn't draft Jameis. Well, at the combine, you know, Jameis was working out in California. I guess Summers was on the same plane. Kent Summers. He was on the same plane leaving Indianapolis from the combine, go back to Phoenix. And I guess, you know, they were going to stop at Phoenix and go to San Diego. Jameis was training in San Diego. James doesn't know Kent Summers from the man on the moon. So he's at the same gate, and he's watching Jameis. Kids see Jameis, you know, in a gate, you know, the airplane. People are going bananas. It's Jameis.
No cameras around.
Nothing. He said Jameis must have spent over an hour signing every autograph there was, had kind words to talk. He didn't just sign an autograph. He'd chat up people. And Kent said, I remember he was putting this out on Twitter. He's like, all these horror stories I hear about Winston, I'm watching this. This kid's amazing.
You know what? That reminds me of a great little.
It's like you when you go to the airport, Ira. Young children that they can't help themselves,
and their parents are watching me like a hawk. You know. Now here's a bromide.
That's a great one.
Jesus
bromide.
Christ. The Kemper almost spit up his Dunkin' Donuts coffee on
he
that
did,
one.
That's a good one. Bromide.
I'm not even sure. I can spell raisin, but I can't spell bromide. Now, Steve, what Lee just said brings this bromide to life. Character is what you show when nobody's looking. You guys have heard that. And that's the example. He didn't know who Summers was. He didn't know anybody in the media field was watching. No cameras. That's how you tell when somebody's genuine. And that's an outstanding story.
And let me say this, Ira. You know, Memorial
Day. So why can't I get 5 minutes with Jameis Winston? He's giving it an hour to the kids.
Ask. You got
to
ask. Got to ask. Ira, text right now. Get it. All right. I just so it's known out there, I did drive safely to and from Jacksonville over Memorial Day weekend. Now, I only drove one leg, but nobody got hurt. Nobody got injured.
Did you go through those speed trap towns on 301, Steve? Did you?
No.
Oh, you didn't take that way.
No, didn't go that route.
You didn't go through Stark.
No, didn't go through Stark.
All right.
And my wife drove the other leg. And,
smart lady.
She hit 95 a couple of times, and she's way more dangerous than I am on the road.
You mean I-95 or 95?
No, 95, the speed limit. The speed limit. Yeah, the speed limit. All right, look. Let's shift gears. And from bromide.
While you were up in Jacksonville, did you check out what was going on with Jalen Ramsey and Fowler and Monty Kiffin?
Well, they weren't doing anything up there, but, you know, interesting enough, they did open – I didn't go to the event, but they did open the huge amphitheater that was built next to the Jaguars Stadium. And Shad Khan, the Jaguars owner with the giant curly mustache.
I think I saw Springsteen in that amphitheater.
Well, it just opened.
Oh, it just opened?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it just opened. It was a big downtown project.
Okay.
And apparently he made some rousing speech, and, you know, he is so committed to that area.
Yeah.
Teams talk about moving, and people, you know, instantly the national media often goes to Jacksonville, small market and whatever.
Absolutely.
But that team's not going anywhere.
And he was very patient with Gus Bradley, too, Lee. No question about it.
He's sort of like the Vinick of Jacksonville,
yes,
Jeff Vinick.
Very much
he's torn in hundreds of millions of dollars to redevelop downtown.
Well said.
And you know, he paid a fortune for the team, I think like $600-700 million. You know, one of the newer owners with the Glazers paid $192 million. And, Jacksonville's not going anywhere. Now, but speaking of teams going somewhere, we got the Raiders. Now, the Raiders, they're moving to Vegas. We all can't wait for the first Bucks game in Vegas. Now, what a fan retreat that would be with Calvin.
Oh, I just hope I'm living then.
I can hear Ira already. No cameras. No video.
Walking through area.
No cell phone video. But the Raiders, we find out, Ira, because you are a sage NFL writer, not just a Bucks man on the beat. You covered the NFL and issues for the Tampa Tribune for
many about
years.
NFL issues from time to time on Joe Bucks Fan.
And you talk NFL issues on Sirius XM Radio all the time. Mad Dog Russo, he has you on there prime time during the week. Even probably a better time than Peter King.
I like it.
How about that? So the Raiders are moving to Oakland. And then we learn over the weekend that they've sold out of
Moving from Oakland.
Raiders are moving to Las Vegas. And we find out they've sold out all their seats. All their season
in
tickets.
Oakland.
Gone.
In Oakland.
Well, for a lame duck team. What does that tell you? And what does that say that the Bucks aren't selling out here? I mean, the Raiders, people can't stand that they're moving. They've had trouble selling tickets in the past. They're the number two team in town. What's going on here?
It tells you that the Raiders have a young, vibrant, dynamic football team, Lee. That's exactly what it tells you. With a hell of a young quarterback who's done more than Jameis Winston in his pro career. Buck fans saw for themselves what Derek Carr's capable of doing last year. He was fantastic in that game. Right through the overtime. I mean, he absolutely riddled the Bucs secondary. If he don't get hurt, who knows what's going on? I think New England probably feared Oakland more than any AFC rival going into the playoffs till Carr went down. Mm-hmm. He's dangerous, and he's got some, you know, good weapons in Cooper and Crabtree, and the defense has some pieces to it. Steve, that's what it tells you. If this was the old 5-11 Raiders, you're not giving me the first part of the story. You're telling me that the stands are going to be half empty. So what does it mean for Tampa Bay? Well, the Bucs are well on their way to getting to that point. I think by the middle of this season, Lee, by the middle of this season, if the Bucs are 5-3 or better, I think you're going to see a big spike at the turnstile.
Interesting.
You know,
Cooler weather, too.
I'd like to see, guys, and I watch this out of the press box because I'm looking directly right at the east side of the stadium, And those suites are half empty.
Yeah.
They're half empty. Yeah. They've been like that for you know, since Gruden left town, I think, or maybe
Which
even
is,
before
that's
that.
About the time the housing crisis.
Yeah. So maybe you see a little uptick there, too. Now, the Bay Area, you know, the other Bay Area is a lot bigger market, let's be honest. Yeah. But it's a decrepit stadium. It's a horrible stadium to watch a game. We've all been there.
Having lived there, I would say that it's not necessarily a bigger market. You got two teams. And the Raiders, it's sort of a burned-out market. I mean, Oakland,
but the Niners suck, too, right now, Steve. The Niners suck.
That's true. But, you know, decrepit stadium, number two team. The Oakland region is known for its bankruptcy and just not being in good shape.
Now, Lee, you'd think they would take a hit as a lame duck team.
You
a little bit
so.
Of a hit. You would think so.
That's just the faithful that they have there. I mean, I saw an article where, I don't know how many people, you know, Mark Davis had said, for the people that are hacked off that were moving to Vegas and you want to get your season ticket money back, I'll refund it. And he did do that for a few thousand people. I don't know how many, but still, people came.
That's a class move. That's a class move by Davis.
Here's what I got to ask. And when I say the Bay Area, I'm talking about Oakland and San Francisco. I've only been out there once in my life. You used to live out there. I was a devoted San Francisco Giants.
That's where Sapp told me to have a nice flight back to Tampa. You know, I'll tell that full story one day on this podcast.
Are the Raiders the number four team in that market? Think about it. The Giants are very popular.
Yes.
Niners are the Niners.
Warriors are fabulous.
Warriors, you took the words out of my mouth. So aren't they the number four team? I would say they're up the food chain from the A's.
And the Sharks. Yeah, certainly. You could make that argument, but it's still the NFL. It's still football. The Raider fans haven't had a lot to cheer about, Steve. Let's be honest. Since they lost that Super Bowl to the Bucks. They went straight downhill.
Yeah.
Absolutely downhill. You talk about years of futility. You know, I like to harp on the 5 years in the NFC South basement. The Raiders had a dozen years of irrelevance, Steve. That's hard to do in the NFL. Terrible draft picks, changing coaches every year.
Oh, yeah.
GMs didn't know what they were doing. This guy, McKenzie, seems to know, you know, he's making some wise draft picks.
Well, Al was.
Yeah, Al was taking on Goodell, and Al got lost at the end. And, see, I think that's a shame that young people only think Al Davis in his later years.
Like a Crypt Keeper.
They don't know what he was like in the 60s and 70s. A revolutionary, Steve.
He was.
Big figure. Big figure.
Yeah, late 80s, I used to be a ticket taker at L.A. Raiders games, very late 80s. I was 19 years old taking tickets. And, you know, that was before anything was scanned. You know, you ripped the ticket, you kept your ticket, you had to go count them. And they had
this is at the Coliseum?
At the L.A. Coliseum, yeah, yeah. So they had this room for the ticket takers, no air conditioning, it was hot in there. You know, that place is ancient as well. And so we're counting up our tickets and going through our steps that we had to do to log all these tickets, you know, by hand, the paper stubs and the whole shot. And in walks Al Davis. And he's just patrols around the outside.
Got the shades on and the silver jacket.
I don't know about the silver jacket. Right. I'm sure he had the shades on, and I'm remembering a T-shirt, but it was definitely not any sort of fancy gear.
So he walks in unannounced. Boom. He's there.
Hey, he just walks in. Yeah, yeah. No, there was no announcement. Please rise. Al Davis is walking.
All right, so how'd you handle
it? He walked around all the time. I recognize him being a football fan, and he's walking around. Everybody sits down at, like, table next to me with these, you know, a couple of girls or something who are counting their tickets in their Raider event hat or whatever, and doesn't say a word. Sits at my table, doesn't say a word, gets up and says, "All right, everybody, keep working hard." And he walks out. That's it. So my big
Al Davis. Ira, you know this, I bet. You're a Brooklyn guy.
Yes.
Who did Al Davis go to high school with? And they were friends till they both died.
Well,
close
I know
friends.
He went to Erasmus High School. It's a famous.
Oh, I thought it was
high
Brooklyn Prep.
No, I believe he went to Erasmus.
Well, he went to high school with a very, very famous football icon. And unfortunately, his legacy was destroyed at the end.
Oh.
And they were friends till the end.
All right, let me hear it.
And Al Davis tried to hire him one time.
Wasn't Sabby Piscatelli, was it?
No. Joe Paterno.
Oh, Joe Paterno. That's outstanding. That's outstanding.
Quality trivia right there, for sure. All right, Ira, so we've...
Hold on. I got one thing to add to this. Years ago, and I think... You know, looking back in honesty, I think it's the best story that I wrote for the Tribune.
Whoa.
I put the most work into it, and it was right after the Super Bowl, and it was like, you know, April, off-season for the Bucks.
Sandy Charbonneau quit.
And a guy named Steve Kornacki was working
Steve.
For the Tribune,
sure.
and he said, "Hey, Ira, I want you to work on an off-season project, something big. You know, you can spend a month
Sandy
or
Charbonneau.
Two." And I said, you know what? I want to do a big, big profile of Steinbrenner. We've written a million Steinbrenner stories, but it's always about him giving to a charity, this and that. I want to do the ultimate Steinbrenner story. Of course, books have been written about him, Bill Madden and other guys. But I took a month. I took a month, and I knew that he was very close to Al Davis.
Oh, Al Davis, yes.
So I was in the office, and Joey Johnston was sitting around, and Joey goes, who's the first guy you're going to call on this story? I said, Al Davis. Johnston looked at me, and Joey knows everybody. He goes, you're not going to get him. Ira, you're not going to get him. He doesn't talk to anybody, especially a guy outside the Bay Area media. I said,
Brooklyn.
Never count a Brooklyn boy out here. So I call, you know, the office and the secretary. Al Davis's office. Ira Kaufman from Tampa Tribune. I'd like to talk to Mr. Davis if he's got some time. What is this concern? And that gave me the opening. His good friend, George Steinbrenner. This is his local paper,
yeah.
And I'm doing a big profile. All right, let me see what's going on. She gets back on about 30 seconds later, and she said, be at your phone at 3 p.m. Be at your phone. Well, I went back home. I'm sitting in my patio, you know, surrounded by my rhododendron. And,
now, there's a word.
And gecko lizards. 3 o'clock, the phone rings. Sports Kaufman. No, I said, hello. And he goes, this is Al Davis calling you back. Al, I can't thank you enough. I'm doing this story about George. You're the first guy I talked to. I know how close you guys are. What makes Steinbrenner such an icon or something? And guys, I couldn't make this line up. Al Davis, without even taking a breath, said, in the history of professional sports, two figures tower above all others. I'm number one, and Steinbrenner's number two. How am I going to top that as a quote?
Yes,
that was my lead. I said, thank you very much. Then we started talking about the old. He goes, where'd you grow up? I told him, Brooklyn. I was a Chiefs fan in the 60s. My brother was a Raiders fan. Oh, man, we started going. And he goes, yeah, we kicked your ass for most of the 60s, didn't we, Kaufman? I said, yeah, but in the last game ever played in the American Football League in Oakland, Chiefs 17, Raiders 7. And he goes, oh, I don't even want to think about that, Ira. And so that's Al Davis. Who else is going to give you a quote in the history of sports? There's two guys. Number one. And, of course, he had to put himself ahead of George. You know. So there's my Al. I think that's a little better story than him watching you count money over
Absolutely.
There.
Not even money, just ticket stubs.
Just ticket stubs.
Fantastic story, Ira. Fantastic. See, this is why the people tune in.
Is that better than the Raisin story, Steve? Because there's going to be other stories.
No, it's not better than the Raisin story. It's not better than the Irv story.
Well, what about the Gruden story with which one of those all-star two-yard runs did you like the best?
Oh.
That's a classic in its own right.
Al Davis checks in at top five. Top five. All right, Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon, present this podcast with great pride and joy. And, of course, we are always visiting their website, edmorriscadillactampa.com and edmorriscadillacbrandon.com. That's where you want to start your car shopping. Plain and simple. Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon is the only luxury dealership in Brandon. And Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. Both so easy to get to. Now, Ira, speaking of the Raiders, I'm listening to NFL radio this weekend. Yesterday, in fact. And we're recording this Tuesday. I'm talking about Memorial Day. Kirk Morrison is on. Played for the Raiders. He's hosting on SiriusXM NFL Radio, and brings up Warren Sapp. And the subject is OTA attendance and the meaning of it. And we have touched on that a lot, especially since you are very focused on Mr. Iverson with the Bucs.
And we talked about the Keyshawn Johnson Sapp rift, and then OTAs was a big part of that.
Exactly. Chris Baker, you know, is your Iverson because we know he doesn't like to practice, and we reviewed that last podcast and his fixing of his socks.
And he's done nothing so far to deter us from it.
Right. He hasn't. He's missed one, and he's done nothing yet to shake that moniker. Now, Kirk Morrison talked about OTAs. The subject was, is it really important and all this, and Odell Beckham taking off, saying, I'm not going to OTAs. Well, Morrison says, I was a third-year linebacker with the Raiders, and Art Shell has hired his coach. And there's going to be a special little spring mini camp or something. Rules were different back then. And I show up. I wasn't that keen on showing up, but I show up. And there's Warren Sapp. He's there early. He's grinding away.
He's taped. Yeah, he's ready to go.
He's grinding away. He's ready to go. And this is Raiders spring OTA kind of setup. And Morrison said, you know what? I went up to Sapp and was like, I had to ask because I was too curious. Like, Sapp, what are you doing here, man?
It's voluntary.
What are you doing here? This is nothing. What are you doing here? And he relays the story that Sapp said, you know what? It's respect for my head coach. That's why I'm here. Respect for the head coach. You respect the head coach. You show up for OTAs because the head coach is here. And that's what you do in the NFL. You respect your head coach or you might as well not be here.
Wow.
And I'm listening to that thinking, okay, DeSean Jackson just took off the Thursday OTA. Brent Grimes, I'm not sure if he showed up yet.
But, Steve,
for
at
OTAs.
That point, what's this little Kirk Morrison supposed to do? Yeah, he's got to follow Sapp's lead.
Yeah, and Morrison says, damn, okay. You know, I sort of opened my eyes. I still remember it today, and, you know, I better work a little harder. And it was a pretty telling story. One I totally wasn't expecting driving down the road.
I didn't know Sapp continued that when he went to Oakland. Lee, certainly he was that way in Tampa.
Yeah, nobody really knows much about his Oakland days because he wouldn't talk to me.
And it was a bad team. It was
a bad team. But so you know what? We know Stapp's dedication and we know the Keyshawn Johnson history. But what do you think of that? Now that you hear that and reflect on some of these big name bucks bailing on these OTAs.
You know, Lee, I don't want to make too much of it because, in quotes, it's voluntary.
Sure.
But in reality, Lee, is it really voluntary when, you know, 90% of the team shows up and you stick out like a sore thumb? You better have a damn good excuse. Now, look, you know, if your wife's having a baby or you're getting married, everybody understands something like that or somebody close to you is very sick.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, to say you got business to attend to, you know, which was Keyshawn's excuse, I'm out in L.A., I got real estate things, and Sapp didn't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I always tell people, you know, Sapp, hey, how the hell did Sapp get in the Hall of Fame in this argument about Terrell Owens? I said, it's apples and oranges. Sapp was not a bad teammate.
Nobody ever said that. No.
Steve, to answer your question directly, you got to get your ass out there. You got to get your ass out there. I don't, you know, this is the new NFL. Yes, it's voluntary. You're not going to be fined. They're not allowed, Lee. Mm-hmm. Can't fine you. But you got to show commitment to your teammates. It's what it's all about. And it's team building, Lee.
Sure.
And you know what? That stuff counts. It really does.
At least show up and be on the floppy hat patrol. You know, there's, what, half a dozen players on the floppy hat patrol? They're on the sidelines. I'm sure they can get an excuse not to show up if they can't practice, but they're there.
Nobody wants to be out there sweating in May, Steve, if you don't have to. But it's a sign of respect
to your teammates,
for your teammates and your coaches. And I think teammates first. We're all in this together. We got a job to do. And you know what? I think there's times during the season, Lee, when that kind of closeness and camaraderie with each other, I think it pays dividends. You can't put a number on it, but I think it contributes.
Well, the irony was DeSean Jackson told all of us media, he told all of us media guys, man, these spring practices are very important time for building and team building and chemistry building, and then the next one he didn't show up. So that was kind of ironic.
And a day after you write that story, he's on social media with all kinds of cryptic messages about, you don't know how bad I want it, and things of that nature. So it's really interesting.
But Izbitz is judging him from his actions.
Ira puts those on social media, too. I just never know what he's referring to. But Kirk Morrison made the statement that, you know what, you can miss OTAs if you have the street cred with your team. If you have the juice where the organization needs you more than you need them, you cannot show up for OTAs. And you know what? Brent Grimes is in that boat. They saw him put together an underrated superstar season last year. Led the league in passes defensed at 33 years old.
And be a pretty damn good mentor for Vernon Hargreaves.
Be a good mentor. Be a guy there all the time. Be a guy who made some huge plays, not even in the passing game, just big tackles. Of course, DeSean Jackson has his resume and his $11 million in the bank, and Chris Baker is Chris Baker, but it's meaningless, but, you know, it does mean something. I don't know what it means.
And it happens in the wake of Todd Monken saying, we're paying you for what you're going to do going forward, not what you've done in the past. Interesting.
I know we discussed this on your podcast that was published Tuesday, and Steve brought this up, and the more I think about what Steve said, the more it makes all sense in the world. What Monken said about that when he said, you know, he went public with that conversation, that was straight out of the Bobby Knight, Bill Parcells book of coaching. That really was. I would lay money. Monken said, hey, DeSean, I'm going to say this because we got young players on the team. I'm going to send a message to these guys. This is what I'm going to do. So you're not blindsided.
So Parcells bores into Phil Sims and kills Phil Sims and everybody's watching.
Yeah.
Hey, if he can do it to a veteran quarterback, he can do it to me.
And Knight was doing that decade, you know, 15 years before Parcells was doing it, where he would...
You call out some of your best players, Steve. That's not a bad strategy.
Yeah. Supposedly, Knight went to Steve Alford one time when Alford was a senior. He's like, look, I know you can take it, and you know you're not good defense. I'm going to ride you on practices because, you know, the young guys, again, makes an impression. And the great one was, and this is up on YouTube, where Knight admitted he did that with Michael Jordan in the 84 Olympics because his theory was, if these guys see me screaming at Michael Jordan, of all people, whoa, and Jordan knew about it. And there was a great story. You can go click. We've got the link on joebucksfan.com. It's a hilarious story about how he was screaming at Jordan. And Jordan said, Coach, you always said I'm the quickest guy around. I'm just doing it so quick you can't even see it.
Steve, what about Monken doing it rather than Dirk Cutter? Interesting.
We talked about this. I think the moral of the story is, the next time I ride you and scream at you publicly, it's strictly
to motivate me.
It's strictly just to get Justin Pulaski in line.
And Gil Arcia better listen.
Just to get Gil Arcia working harder on Saturdays and try to get the commish on a little more on track. You know, some people are a little riled up by Bucks Uncensored, his great podcast.
And Todd, are you listening, Todd? here we go.
Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. So that's all. Don't take it personally, Ari. See,
I got a tough hide, baby. I'm Brooklyn born and bred over there.
It always cracks me up when you reference my bad driving and you say, Brooklyn, or Lee says, oh, Brooklyn, you're used to that. Nobody has a car in Brooklyn. Come on. Nobody knows how to drive.
We took the F train, Lee. The F train, baby.
I've seen how people drive in Manhattan, so it's like, holy smokes.
All right. On the last podcast, that was a little one-liner, and Lee gave you a little He gave you a little pro football focus needling on it, but we let it go. But you said in that podcast that, let's face it, gentlemen, the O-line last year was not good, not up to snuff, and it didn't get the job done. Those are some pretty harsh words, and a lot of Bucks fans agree with you. A lot don't. It's a very divisive issue, but I'm going to ask this to you in this way, Ira. The organization doesn't agree with you, and the proof is that they didn't go out and do anything with the O-line, and they had the resources to do so. So what's the deal, Mr. Kaufman? What's your real feelings here? And give us perspective.
I understand that the Buck Brain Trust, Lee, might not agree with my assessment. You know, the argument is they used so many running backs last year, Lee. They couldn't get into a rhythm. They couldn't get separation in the passing game, Steve. So that's why Winston had to hold the ball, and that's why he took hits. Those are excuses, and I don't necessarily agree with it. Now, at the same time, they would say, yes, we have addressed the offensive line because we have a new right guard and a new center, and Sweezy's coming on board, and we're going to get our best five offensive linemen on the field. I understand that up to a point, too, but Sweezy's got a lot to prove, Steve. Now, let's go back to the 2016 Bucks. They took a major step back from an offensive standpoint. Cutter admitted that when the season ended. He said there was a lot of reasons for it. Maybe he thought his play calling wasn't up to snuff. I think he would say he didn't have any speed out there, and the absence of Vincent Jackson didn't help. But Vincent Jackson didn't do all that much in 2015 when they had a record-breaking offense. Lee, let's be honest. That was not sparked by a big year by Vincent Jackson. So, look, they didn't do a particularly good job of blocking for the run, and then the pass blocking was adequate. And adequate's not good enough anymore, so I'm going to stand with it, Steve. They got to do a better job. I think even the offensive line coach would admit that. I think he's going to ride him hard. But right now, publicly speaking, they're saying they got all the faith in the world in those five guys. Lee, I don't care what Pro Football Focus says. I'm not putting any stock in guys sitting there in a T-shirt. I don't know who's grading these players. I use my own eyes. Lee, I won't speak for you, but I thought the offensive line was okay, and I think that's about the best you can say about them.
Yeah, they're okay. I know there was this groundswell. It started when he was a rookie about Donovan Smith. I'm not going to go into a big thing about Donovan Smith, but I remember when there's a groundswell, and I'm not seeing it. The next game, I bring out my binoculars and I focus specifically on a said player, and at Indianapolis, Roy Cummings was sitting to my left. Now, Roy, I might have to ask you a question too because I'm going to have tunnel vision. I'm watching Donovan Smith every play. I didn't see where he was that bad. I didn't see where he was that bad last year. And the people that are screaming most are not people in the NFL or former people in the NFL. It's wannabes. the guys in their dorm rooms in Dublin, you know, looking for beer money, judging off a broadcast tape, and who have no clue, zero clue, nor do I, what the line calls were. You know?
I don't really understand this uproar about Donovan Smith, Steve. Maybe you can fill me in here. Number one, he's very, very durable, at least through two seasons.
Hasn't missed a snap.
Very durable.
I'll cut you off. I'll explain it to you right now. Very simple uproar. Okay, fans see some have seen some very bad plays from Donovan Smith. Very bad plays. Okay.
In pass protection or the run game.
Period. They've seen some bad stuff from Donovan Smith. Okay. It drives them so wild and so crazy that they're
blinded
and not seeing the good stuff, and they're not recognizing that, okay, this guy's shown a ton of upside.
There's 1,000 snaps a season, Steve.
I know. He's shown a ton of upside. He's shown some ugly Donovan Smith, but largely he's a pretty consistent player who needs more consistency, typical of a 23-year-old left tackle, and the guy's there every snap, and he's a big body, and there's not a reason in the world to ditch the guy.
Same thing happened to Donald
Penn. Crazy. For a 23-year-old.
So the guy's not Walter Jones. Is that the argument?
Yeah, basically, and I was talking with someone high up with the Bucks about this. I said, maybe it's what I expect out of a lineman. I do not expect a pancake block each and every snap. When it comes to pass blocking, the key is delaying the guy. It's not pancake blocking. It's not manhandling the guy.
And if you give Winston 5 seconds and he gets sacked, that's on Winston.
Yeah. I mean, if the guy's half a step from Winston, he's clawing at Winston, but he doesn't get to Winston, you could argue, okay, the guy got exposed, the offensive lineman, but he did his job. The guy didn't get to Winston. Who cares if he shoved him back 5 yards? He didn't get to Winston. And to me, that's what I look for in offensive line. Not that they're a pancake block, not that the guy manhandles him. His job is to keep him, however he can do it, keep him from getting to Winston. That's, and if a guy, like I said, if he gets a step away from Winston and swings and misses, he still did his job. He didn't get to Winston.
Steve, if the O-line plays well in 2017, let's say it right here and now. If they play well and Winston stays healthy, this team's going to score a lot of points. Period. End story.
Sage wisdom.
Am I wrong?
No, of course. Of course you're not wrong. Look, Donovan Smith right now is an average NFL starting left tackle with A-list durability. He's got A-list talent.
He's got an upside.
And that's where you get the range and consistency. What makes him average is when he's not average, he's either fantastic or crappy. And he's on the rise, 23 years old. This is a guy on the rise. So Bucks fans, buckle in. He's going to be here.
I'm not sure if the Bucks beat Kansas City without Donovan Smith last year. He had that good of a game. He really did.
That's the best game the Bucks played last year, Lee.
I got a quick question for you, Ira, about the offense. You're speaking about the offensive line. And I think it's fair to say DeMar Dotson didn't have a great year last year. Yeah, he got dinged up a little bit. He didn't have a great year. No one respects Donovan Smith more than us three. I mean, anybody that's ever dealt with Donovan, just a class act. I mean, the ultimate class act. Great guy. He's up there. He's long in the tooth for an offensive lineman. Do you think he might have seen his better days?
Steve, I share DeKemper's sentiments about Dotson as an off-the-field stand-up guy. But having said that, in the words of Izbits, and he says it every broadcast, and he's not wrong. Buck fans don't care about that. Joe Buck fan readers don't care if Dotson's running for class president. That's why I think there's a little weakness there in terms of depth. Who's the swing tackle? Well, last year, the swing tackle was a guy who was exposed late in the season.
Oh, yeah.
In the biggest game of the year, and he's not there anymore.
Swing saloon doors.
Keyword swing.
Swing. they didn't address it in free agency.
Swing!
Lee, or the draft, mm-hmm. didn't address it. I don't think it's crazy that they pick up a veteran tackle, before the season, Steve.
No.
You don't think that's going to happen?
You've already written that. I don't think it's crazy, but I do think that this regime, they're not thinking that way. Dotson, we here.
Would you say serviceable for Dotson?
Lee and I at JoeBucksFan.com have never been fans of Dotson, the football player. Considered him average at best.
Yeah.
We even wrote many times the guy's below average. But he's in that range. Other people think he's shot the moon. I can't even understand what these people see. But the point is, he's a low-mileage guy as far as his legs. He didn't play a lot. He doesn't have a ton of mileage.
Longest tenured buck, Steve.
Longest tenured buck, but he didn't play necessarily a lot. And he's okay. He got the money last year and his play tailed off. I think he'll probably play a little better this year. But, yeah, this might be his last year as a Buccaneer, and it's an area to address going forward. Now, Ira.
Swing tackle real quick.
Yeah.
George Warhop, pardon me, a couple weeks ago when we had a media availability for the assistants. Warhop was on record saying the swing backup tackle is Pamphiel.
I believe that's
if
right.
If anything happens to Donovan Smith or anything happens to Damar Dotson, Pamphiel slides in. Now, yeah. Next question is
who's Evan Smith in, to guard. Guard or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. Probably.
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Ira, first off, people are loving this because we've gone very long on the podcast. Very, very long. 50 minutes already.
People love that, Stephen.
Before we hit the added button. So we're really at like 23 minutes. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
The rest is gravy, baby. It's
yeah,
gravy.
So you did a solid for your people today, going a little long on the podcast. We actually, your next podcast, we're not even going to get to it this time. We've got some really good safety talk to get into, delve deep into, some things that we've seen, some things that Lee's seen, and we'll have the benefit of another practice to maybe round that out a little bit from what we see at safety. One little tiny thing, Ira, which I think it's worth noting. Before I say that, leave a review of the podcast on iTunes. It's very easy. You just type in your feelings, your thoughts, and you hit go. Ira likes to read these things, to pore over them, to critique himself.
Like Jameis, always trying to get a little
always
better.
Always trying to get better. He's amazing. Even though Ira's amazing, he's got a, it's how he started the podcast. He said, I'm amazing.
I want to listen to that. I'll see if you're
making
that.
I'm going to cut that audio and send it to Kamish, to Justin. He could put it as part of his intro. But no, seriously, leave a review. Come on, you can do it. Step up and do it. Review the podcast.
And tell your friends about this podcast too, Steve.
One little nuance, Lee, and I think this is important for us all to just give a tiny little chirp on. We've heard, Ira mentioned the rhythm of the running backs, that Dirk Cutter, you know, talked about issues running the ball last year because of too much change at running back.
He said that at
that
Combine.
That was a common excuse, and Ira said it's called it a flat-out excuse. But think about that. If Cutter believes that, doesn't that work against Doug Martin returning in week four? When all of a sudden you're going to totally shift gears and maybe throw a whole wrench into the running back's rotation when the head coach is just telling us all, anybody who'll listen, damn, we ran six running backs last year. That's the problem.
Not only that, Steve, that's an excellent point. I hadn't thought of it. It's the first time I'm going to give Isbeth credit in this podcast. Maybe the last, Lee. but I dare say, Lee, tell me if you agree. I think the odds are very good that the Bucs will run by committee. In 2017, they got some depth back there, with or without Martin. They've got depth, guys of varying skills. And are we going to have the same excuse, Lee, if the running game doesn't work, that they're using too many running backs?
He can't use that excuse.
I mean, the day of the 22-carry running back, it's gone. It's basically gone.
If he goes running back by committee, and yeah, the Bucs do have depth at running back, but it's like, meh. It's like, unless it's McNichols goes nuts. Yeah, depth, a bunch of...
Well, we know you love Charles Sims, and so you don't want Sims
Charles
carrying
Sims
the ball.
Is a one-trick pony, and that one trick he does very well.
Can I get him going, Steve? It's very easy.
Nah,
very,
but, very. Yeah, I mean, Cutter, he told me that at the Combine to my face, and I ran that by Pat Kerwin. I don't think I've ever written it yet because I'm saving up for July. You know, we got to have stories in July. And I ran that by Pat Kerwin, who, former Bucs scout, former director of player personnel for the Jets, he absolutely agreed with Cutter. He said, absolutely agreed. Timing's a big thing when it comes to running backs. So if they go by committee, Cutter's excuse for the lack of blocking goes out the window.
Steve, teams go by committee. It's what they do.
You know what? The running back rhythm thing, it only just came to me during the podcast here. Because if you're going to use that as an excuse, then good golly, dropping a new guy in.
Suppose you're running well and all of a sudden Doug Martin's there in week four?
In week four, that basically inviting disruption into your rhythm.
Sure
so
is.
It kind of runs counter to what Cutter has said. Something to file away. And
Steve, it's what you say when you don't have a good ground game, in my opinion.
Well, you could say a lot of. You could just say the ground game sucks, and we're drafting a running back, Dalvin Cook, and all. You know, you could have gone a different route. They didn't want to say that or do that. And I also wrote down that I forgot to mention that Peyton Barber, guy doesn't look good catching the football in OTAs from what I've seen
ponies.
So far.
Whew.
Now it seems like he's just a run between the tackles guy, but maybe that's I don't know.
He had a couple of good games last year. He did.
It's going to be fun. All right, Ira, put your feet up, do what you do, watching the geckos on your screen porch, you said, whatever it is you do.
We got another OTA session right dead ahead of us, baby.
Yeah, the what bugs me about the OTA sessions is that we don't get to watch all of them. So, to me, I don't understand why Dirk Cutter and the Bucs open them all up to the media. Why do you want the media just reporting on half of them when basically that says these guys have half the story and they're going to run with half the angles because they don't see what's going on the other
Cutter
half.
Cutter doesn't want us to cover them at all.
To me, it's just stupid. Isn't that just...
Yeah, I mean, suppose McNichols, on Wednesday had a fantastic day. Nobody knows about it except Scott Smith from Buccaneers.com.
And Joe Kania. I know, I've written a couple of Chris Godwin stories about how he, you know, looked good. I hate to use that phrase. And the last time I wrote about Godwin, I said, you know, I wrote this in the story. I said, I'm almost scared to write this because every guy that stuck out since JoeBucksFan.com has had media access to the Bucks, every guy that stood out in underwear football stunk out loud or never made the team. So if I'm writing accolades about Chris Godwin in May,
remember
I'm
Kenny,
scared to
remember
death.
Kenny Bell, gentlemen? Yeah, Kenny Bell looking sharp.
Tommy Streeter. Solomon Patton.
There's a lot to be said.
Chris
for that.
Owusu.
Yes, there's a lot.
Michael
to be said.
Clayton. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, excuse me. All right, till next time, Steve.
Till next time. And yeah, those OTAs, Ira, man, what's with the Bucks? Open them all up. What are you afraid of? I don't
Come on,
understand.
Open them up, baby.
Open them up. You really want us ripping a guy one day when he's just had two practices in a row that we couldn't watch? It's stupid. But oh, well, what do we know? We'll just put our feet up and, Ira, do whatever sages do tonight. Hone your craft and all the things you do, your Riesling and your raisins, and just have a great day.